Are you ready now? Be my queen, just take your love. All you need, but to you. Anything you want, my girl. Anywhere you want, my love.
Hello, all my beautiful listeners. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Wine and Uncorked Chronicles podcast with me, Sylvie, your host. So first, I want to start off by saying happy International Women's Month, a belated happy International Women's Day. Shout out to my friend Tina. It's actually her birthday on the 8th. So just want to celebrate you, my dear, dear friend. Today I'm feeling quite reflective. I felt as though I wanted to talk about something that happened to me in my former years. So when I was but a mere young teenager between the ages of 13 and 14. And I'm inviting you to this chapter of my life, obviously because I believe that stories should be told, fun stories, funny stories. And of course, my podcast is, you know, mostly leaning towards the funny, but this is uncorking the stories that make me who I am. And so sometimes the stories are going to be a bit more sullen, a bit more deep. And this is a particularly interesting one because it really has shaped the person that I am. It's shaped my experiences and some of the reasons why I'm here today. So I just want to start by saying, grab your favorite glass of wine, you drink, sit back, and join me on this intimate journey. It's going to be a monologue that I believe speaks to resilience, it speaks to courage, and obviously the unwavering spirit of a young 14-year-old girl who was navigating the storm of the post-election violence, 2008. So, yeah. My family was directly affected. I was directly affected. And when I say directly, I don't mean that, there are people who suffered way worse fates than we did. People lost their lives. People lost their homes. To some extent, we did. So let's rewind the clock back to a time of innocence, to small town living, to friends, and the simple rhythm of a 13-year-old girl. Life was, well, life. It was just navigating the experiences of being 13, living in a small town, having a close group of friends, having a lot of freedom, and of course, just not knowing what the world has to offer in terms of negative. So, it was 2007, and we used to come to Nairobi. We lived in Kisumu, a lakeside town. If you don't know where that is, Google it. We used to come to Nairobi every Christmas, obviously, to be with our extended family. It was a time for us to meet our cousins. One of them you already met on the podcast, Kristen. This is obviously before they changed when the election dates used to happen. They used to happen over the Christmas period. So before everything changed, that was the routine. And so we would travel to Nairobi over the Christmas period. We would visit shags, just the normal thing that Kenyans do over the Christmas period. So this particular Christmas, of course, there was two presidents who were running against each other. The incumbent, who was President Mwai Kibaki at the time, and the person who was challenging his presidency or wanted to take over that, called Raila Odinga. So there was what we called the Banana Party and what we called Orange at the time, ODM, the Orange Democratic Movement. So if you don't know, Kenya is unfortunately really divided along its tribal lines. And these two, let's say, leaders sat on opposite ends of those tribes. And so, at the time, there was a lot of sentiment of, oh, we're going to have, you know, the ODM leader is going to, you know, it was more like he was the favorite to win. And of course, Kenya is unfortunately not the most corrupt free nation in the world, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. But anyway, it was very, there was this dark cloud kind of brooding, and people just didn't know what was going to happen. The elections were very close. So obviously my parents voted in Nairobi. And I remember right before we went to Nairobi, there was a friends of friends who we were playing with. And mind you, I was 13, and, you know, somehow you end up talking about these things. And this one person made a remark, which, of course, is quite horrible to think about. But, you know, he said, all you people from this tribe are going to go back to the mountains. And the mountains meaning basically where our tribe originated from. Now, obviously, at the time, very anti-tribal talk, but this was kind of how things were done. It's not something that is something to be happy about, but, you know, this is the state of what happened. So we ended up going to Nairobi. We stayed there. The election kind of results were taking ages to process, and the person who won, Mwai Kibaki, of course, that then gave ground to a lot of contention areas where there was alleged rigging that happened. So basically stealing votes. And this was alleged from the opposition party. Now, what then happened is that this kind of led to people from the tribes now starting to fight against each other. Now, the very sad thing about when this happens is that people who have been living in harmony for generations suddenly forget that they've been living in harmony, and suddenly forget that they have friends. And of course, all kinds of threats began, and that's when the violence kind of erupted. Now, of course, we hadn't planned to be in Nairobi for longer than the Christmas period. Of course, we had to go back to school. People had to go back to work, but there were riots. The killing began, and life changed completely, and I didn't know that it would change that quickly. So the decision to move to Nairobi, of course, a city that for me was big, was unknown, a fresh start that was born out of necessity and not really want. I remember the emotional turmoil, right? The fear that just hung in the air. Like, how did we and my family navigate those treacherous waters? To this day is, you know, it's somehow, it's very hard to remember those hard times, because they were really hard, especially on my mom. I think that when you're younger, you're able to adapt to things a lot quicker. But mind you, you know, we had an amazing house. We had friends there. We had, you know, my mom had a good job, and my dad still works in Kisumu now. So basically, yeah, life was kind of set up. And then came this new chapter, Nairobi, a new city, a new school, and the challenge of leaving everything behind. So friends that I had been very close with for such a long time, my swimming buddies, just people who I considered my family, essentially. And I struggled to adapt, I must say, face challenges that seemed insurmountable at the time. And asking myself how I found my footing is really strange. It's unfamiliar territory to tread back on. But I think that this is the part where it becomes really prevalent how much this has changed my life. So essentially we were stuck in between living with different family members. So my grandmother, my father's brother. And we did have a home to stay in when we used to go to Nairobi. And this ultimately ended up being the home that we now live in. And it was very tough, because for many months, we were living in other family members' houses. So adding on the pressure of being in a space that shouldn't have as many people as a new family. And it was firstly very hard to understand what this meant for my family, but also very hard to understand what that meant for the rest of my life. Because initially it was meant to be that we're there for maybe a term or two until the dust settled. But it became apparent that that was not going to be the case, and that a decision had to be made to start this new life. Now, Nairobi is a big city. So it's the capital. So everything is different there. the way children are brought up is different. There's obviously a certain element of like, you know, navigating big cities that are more dangerous, that come with stupid amounts of traffic. And that was crazy, dealing with that. And I remember when I came to this new school, making friends, and yeah, it became a bit of an emotional battleground. I definitely struggled with grappling how to make myself vulnerable enough about our situation. So there's still some people who don't really know the intricacies of how this meant, you know, how this happened, and just coming to the realization that your home is no longer your home and you have to find a new home. Now, we were by no means internally displaced peoples. We still had a roof over our head, but so many Kenyans lost their houses. So many Kenyans lost their family members. They lost friends. And starting to piece back those things is definitely one of the hardest things that any family can go through. And of course, in the midst of this chaos, family is your anchor, right? Friends in the community played very pivotal roles in holding us up during these very testing times. Their support was a lifeline that kept us going. So as I said, going back, imagine you've been housed for 6 months or more under the same roof with extended families. Just a weird time of transition, a very strange time of understanding, I guess, in hindsight, the burden that that put on your other family members to cater for you, the burden of them, you know, of course, providing their empathy and understanding the situation and knowing that in many ways this had zero to do with us. It had everything to do with the leaders who were fighting for their own needs, for their own egos, who stirred up a tribal war that has been a horrible part of our history, and bringing that up now that caused basically almost a civil war in our country. It was so bad that they had to get Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General for the United Nations, to basically mediate between these two fully grown male adults who basically held the future of our country in their hand, who were fueling tribal wars, without understanding that the people who do suffer the most is not them. The people who suffer the most is the people who voted for them, which to this day also makes me shocked that, you know, we went through that and we still have these anti-tribal sentiments going around, even though they mean absolutely nothing. Anyway, back to what obviously this meant for us. So I think that as time began to pass, and I remember we began renovating the house because it was too small to have a whole family of four living there for an extended period of time. And going through having to deal with all the renovations, the cement everywhere, like living in a house that was just covered in cement, and obviously dealing with the everyday, trying to figure out friendships, you know, them asking you, oh, you know, where do you live, you know, all these things, and trying to invite them into your life and not really wanting that was particularly hard because, you know, we came from a city where, you know, things just were very optimistic. Things were very hopeful. Things were way easier because everything was way smaller. The sense of community was much more evident then. And it was hard for me to allow myself to be vulnerable with people, when I moved to Nairobi, because in many ways, I was ashamed of the fact that we were people who had suffered from something like this. Talking about it is very tough, but I mean, you know, I'm finally at the point where I'm comfortable enough to share this with you and the world. And I believe being vulnerable is a very important part of inviting people into your space and to sharing realities with them and to sharing, you know, experiences that all make us human. I think that, you know, this resilience, and I just want to shout out my mom. She's a superwoman. She really is, because in as much as I remember seeing her struggle with this, she always made a point to ensure that her children and her husband was okay before her. Man, guys, mothers are, you know, they are a different breed of humans. The things that they do to keep their family well, to keep their family fed, to keep their family homed, to keep them emotionally stable, is something that I think we just don't give mothers enough credit. And I know, you know, I know that we have Mother's Day and everything, but honestly, when people say every day is Mother's Day, I must say, and it's only because I've gotten older that I can remember, I remember the toll that this took on her, and yeah, the darkness that I saw her go through. It was a really tough time for her. And of course, me seeing that, it also affected me. There was a time where I spoke to her not long ago, and I was asking her about how she witnessed me transitioning from being in Kisumu to being in Nairobi. And she was like, I saw how you struggled, you know? I saw how hard it was for you to allow people in and to let yourself be seen as this person that you are. And yeah, I if it wasn't for my mom keeping us up, if it wasn't for the group of friends who I eventually now call my best friends, my go-to, my girls, shout out to all you women for being there for me in ways that you probably didn't even know then. And of course, you know, there's always these subtle things that happen when you're 14 and you're trying to be somebody who you're not, you know? And I'm not saying that I was trying to be somebody I was not, but there were definitely times when I really struggled to relate to individuals in the school that I was in, simply because it felt like they came from a completely different world, and it felt as though they would never understand the turmoil in which my family and I faced. But time went by, we adjusted, we adapted, we survived, we lived, and a new world began for me. I met the amazing friends I have. I found my feet, I found my following, I managed to really immerse myself in the things that I wanted, which was to do well in school, to have a bloody good time being a teenager, of course, and experiencing those things was because I moved to Nairobi, because things happened in the way that they had to happen this way. And knowing that at the end of it, everything was going to be okay, at that point was not something that I saw or understood. But yeah, as I said, from the chaos emerged hope, my hope, my family's hope, all of our hope, and all those memories, I thank them for being really a part of who I am today. My resilience, my strength, my ability to see hope as the only way that you can continue living, my ability to choose neutrality in times when everything is so polarized, to this very day where I struggle to make a choice about choosing leaders in my country, because I know that unfortunately many of the decisions that young people like myself have to make when we are voting is along tribal lines, and I refuse to be that person. I refuse to stand for prejudice. I refuse to stand for having to choose based along those lines. I will go left field if I have to. I voted for somebody in the election, the first election I voted for, which was the 2017 elections. I voted for somebody and people told me that was a wasted vote, because obviously many times there's two evils that you have to choose from, and you have to decide which is the better of the two evils. And I remember I said that that was not going to be me. I said that that is the most, for me, stupid thinking, because you are perpetuating the voice of stagnance. You are perpetuating the voice that change has to start with the masses, but it doesn't start with the masses. It starts with individuals choosing to make that change. And I decided going forward that that would always be my MO. That was how I was going to operate, is that I would make a decision based around what I feel my needs are and the needs of what I think the people of Kenya would benefit for. Now, I don't speak for other Kenyans, but I speak for how I see things. And I have to say that, you know, you do see a shift, a change there. But anyway, I'm not getting into politics because I'm not somebody who even likes to discuss politics. But what I would like to say to my cherished listeners who have joined me to this far, who have listened to my stories, who've laughed with me, to my interviewers who have been here. All of you have played such an important part in allowing me to share this. I don't think that people give enough credit to what sharing means for the soul, what redemption you get by telling your truth, by standing with being vulnerable, by allowing your hardships to not define you, but refine you into a person who is able to look back on life and say that there was a reason that these things happened to me, because if they didn't happen like that, I wouldn't be sitting here in front of a microphone talking to you guys, you know? So resilience really is a quality that I always want to embody, is that I believe resilience can get you anywhere. I believe that persistence and resilience can give you the strength to carry on even when you feel like there's nothing else to carry on for. So with that said, we're going to take a break now, and then we're going to get into a more lighter part of this episode. So cue in the intermission.
Well, I ain't sure, but I think this girl is dangerous, dangerous. Cause she be on my mind, last night was fabulous.
Welcome back, good people. So this is a new segment that I am adding to my podcast, and I would love to hear your views on this. So I'll put out a poll, and I would love to hear what you think of this. So I'm sure you've all heard of Reddit. So I obviously I follow quite a few podcasts who do these, what they call Am I the Asshole? And there's hilarious content on Reddit for anyone who ever wants to visit this subreddit page. It's called Am I the Asshole? And the most hilarious dilemmas come through. So today we are going to be talking about a dilemma that I found. And I already know the answer, but maybe you guys could throw in a little devil's advocate in there. But it's crazy, honestly. So title, Am I the Asshole for Hiding a Relationship with My Sister's Ex-Boyfriend? So anyway, let me not comment right now, because of course I already have a strong opinion. So am I the asshole for hiding a relationship with my sister's ex-boyfriend? I am 20 years old, female, messed up. So my sister, 23, got a boyfriend about 5 years ago. So she was 18 at the time and I was 15. He was cute and nice and smart and good looking. So I developed a kind of little crush on him. But it was nothing, because he was 20 and I was 15 at the time. Mm-hmm. Time went on, and as I got older, the more I liked him, but I never acted on my feelings, and he never did anything to me. Last summer, my sister and him broke up. I was disappointed, of course, because he was a really good guy, but at the same time, I felt relieved, because now I never have to see him in love with my sister again. First of all, crazy. 2 months later, my sister got a new boyfriend, and he started to date someone else. I started to miss him because my sister's new boyfriend wasn't as good as the other guy, but I also missed him as a friend. I think that it was maybe 3 months ago. I was at a bar and drinking a little with my friends, and I was feeling a little tipsy, but not more than that. Suddenly, I see him in the bar. I got surprised, so I started talking to him, and it was getting late, so he asked me if he could drive me home. I said that it would look weird if he drove me home, so he drove me to his apartment, and I said that I could walk from there. But he insisted that I could sleep at his place, so I went up to his apartment, and one thing led to another. The day after, I felt so bad that I just left the apartment, and I didn't speak to him for maybe 2 weeks, but I couldn't stop to think about him and about what we did. So 2 months ago, I went to his apartment, and we did it again. We started to go on dates, and I'm honestly in love with him. I've never felt like this for anyone, but I can't ever tell my family. My sister would hate me, and my dad would be disappointed. I don't even know how my mom would react, but not good. I want to spend my life with this guy, but I don't want to lose my family. What should I do? Should I tell the guy that I love him, or should I tell my family? So that's the dilemma, guys. So is she the asshole? 105. 50, 70,000 million percent you are the asshole. How do you sleep with your sister's ex-boyfriend and not expect that there would be some animosity behind that? And like, also this excuse you said of, oh, he said, let me drop you home. And you're like, no, home, I don't want to go home because it's weird. Might look weird. The fact that you knew it like might look weird should have been flag number one to stop you from making such a stupid decision. So now, not only is it going to be extremely detrimental to you to tell your family and your sister, especially, who's going to feel betrayed, even if I've even lost my words because this is so messed up. And you know that this was going to go down badly. You were the asshole because you made a decision without your brain. You made it knowing that this should not be something that you're allowed to happen. Now, if there was ever a case where you had told your sister, look, and probably this is completely unrealistic, but if you had told your sister, look, I kind of fancy your ex-boyfriend. Is it okay if I take my shot at it? That still wouldn't go down well. It's never going to go down well, unfortunately. That's the world we live in. But you acted on your feelings and you did something that was wrong. Now, I don't even know how I can advise you. You're never going to hear this anyway, but what's kind of messed up is that there seems to be some deep-seated issues there that make you kind of not lean into your urges here, and didn't make you think twice about allowing yourself to end up hooking up with a guy, and now you say you're in love with him, and you're 23 years old. I mean, 20 right now. You're young. You're so young. What you're feeling right now is lust. This guy, he's older than you. He's using you. He may enjoy the experience, and he may also just enjoy the thrill that he's getting to hook up with his older sister's with his ex's younger sister, because that's a thing. But yes, you are the asshole for hiding this relationship. You completely are. And of course, your family was never going to take it well, whether you were honest about it from the get-go or now. This is always just dangerous territory. Now, again, guys, I want devil advocate opinions. And of course, this is the thing. I'm allowed to have an opinion. Maybe I'm being too judgmental. And I'm not even being judgmental. I'm just thinking about if this was the case, if I had a sister and this happened, especially at the tender age of 20, you've basically broken the trust between you and your sister. How you repair that is going to be entirely up to you. I wouldn't know what to advise you, whether to keep this a secret to your grave, which most times that never works, or to be honest about it and deal with the repercussions of having to go through the trials that are going to come with you having made such an irresponsible decision. You're a full grown-up person who made a terrible decision, and there's going to be consequences. People are going to get hurt. And now you say you started going on dates and you're honestly in love with him. And you never felt like this for anyone. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is just never going to end well, to be honest. So anyway, guys, are you the asshole? In my opinion, yes. Should you seek redemption? That's the God honest way to go. I wouldn't know what to do in a situation like this, to be honest. And I would probably write to Reddit asking for people's opinions and hate every single person's answer, because I would know what it would come with. But at the end of the day, this is a crazy story. Crazy, crazy story. I don't even know where I would begin if I was the older sister and I found that out. I honestly think that if you had... And this is hard. It's hard. Of course, you don't want to, like, in retrospect, nothing matters because what has happened has already happened. But if I was the older sister, what would I have preferred to hear? To hear about it from the grapevine that my younger sister is having a full-blown relationship with my ex-boyfriend, or for my sister to have come to me and been like, and just torn off the bandaid and said, look, this has happened and here I am now. And I want to be honest with you. I know you hate me, but we need to figure out something from here. And honestly, it's not the guy's fault. He's also doing some toxic shit right here, but you're both toxic, to be fair. And this is just behavior that is not adult. It's behavior that has consequences, unfortunately. And it is behavior that will come back and bite you and very much put a dent in your relationships with your family should this come out. So that's it for Am I the Asshole? Guys, please let me know if you enjoyed that. If you want to hear more juicy Am I the Assholes, I'm here for you. I've got many. I have found so many that I'm going to provide as content for you. But until such time, here's the wine review.
Well, look what the cat dragged in. Corporal Corkscrew. So you've decided to grace me with your presence, huh? Well, I've been meaning to have a little chat about your newfound friendship with the Katsunuma Black Queen Rogue Red Wine. I see you've decided to indulge just a little. So what's the story there, Corkscrew? Have you two been pen pals, or is it just the wine's more captivating than your riveting personality? Shh, let me get this straight. This Black Queen Rogue, as you so eloquently put it, like a prima donna, it won't just pour itself into any old glass, will it? It needs a bit of a ceremony, and clearly a ceremony from you. Well, forgive me if I'm not planning to roll out the red carpet for a bottle of fermented grapes. I didn't realize we were dealing with the Beyoncés of wine here. And what about the smell, Corporal Corkscrew? You speak about blackberries, plums, and of course a hint of insubordination. Kind of like you. And are we talking about a wine or your career? So, you say that the finish of the wine is bold and rebellious, just like your recruit, just like your brigade. Have you seemed to have forgotten who you were speaking to or what you are dealing with here? Do they give you wine appreciation courses in boot camp now? Is that what is happening underneath my nose? Listen, Corkscrew, look, I don't have time for this nonsense. I didn't sign up for this nonsense. I enlisted you to drink the bloody wine, not babysit a bottle with delusions of grandeur. The Black Queen Rogue might think it's royalty, but I'll be damned if I'm going to treat it like the king of the wine cellar. I'm the only king in here. King Kong ain't got shit on me. Now, get that bottle into a glass and do it before I start thinking that maybe you'd better be suited for a career as a grape therapist. Do I make myself clear? You have your orders, Corkscrew. I suggest you follow them before this Black Queen Rogue gets a promotion to head sommelier. Wouldn't want the wine to outrank you now, would we? Didn't think so.
If you've enjoyed the journey, don't forget to raise your glass, leave a like, share your thoughts, let me know your favorite moment. Until next time, continue savoring the richness of life's mysteries. This is Sylvie signing off from Wine and Uncorked Chronicles. See you on the next episode.